what this passage tells us about discipline. If it's for the benefit of the recipient, we noted on Sunday, anything that obviously injures the child, whether that be physical injury or emotional injury, would be not only wrong, but certainly counterproductive. And in fact, we noted that the Bible doesn't condone abuse or injuring children, or certainly doesn't condone uncontrolled anger on the part of a parent. If that's what we're doing, we're modeling the wrong thing. That we blew our stack with our kids, and that's not setting the right example. And in fact, in Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 4, we see that in our discipline, we're specifically commanded not to discourage our children, or not to encourage rebellion, to frustrate, depending on the translation that you're reading from. And so if our discipline causes our children to act like the proverbial dog with his tail between his legs that crouches and shies away from everyone and everything, then we're doing something wrong, bad wrong. And if the result is that our children are angry and rebellious, I think about a book that was made into a movie that was about a guy whose father was a Marine Corps colonel, and his idea of raising children was it's a hard world out there, so you got to make them tough, and so my job is to make them tough. And so he was really literally abusive to the child. I mean, used profanity and physical abuse. Chad went to the emergency room numerous times and had to make up stories about why he was there. But, this guy was thinking, I love my child. I'm going to make him tough. And, of course, the kid is thinking, I hate this guy. He hates me and I hate him. Well, obviously that's, a failure in discipline. As it's not the example that God sets. While it's true that discipline is not pleasant, it doesn't necessarily always have to be punishment or punitive. We looked at the example of chores as something that obviously a person can learn from. That's not punitive. And I mentioned one of my favorite definitions for discipline was the definition that M. Scott Peck uses in his book, The Road Less Traveled. He said, discipline is the basic set of tools we require to solve life's problems. And if you think about that, I mean, if in the business world, you want workers who are disciplined. If you're in an athletic contest, you want players who are disciplined. You don't want them jumping off sides all the time and getting penalties every other play. And so he points out, when he talks about the tools of discipline, it's interesting. He lists things like delaying gratification. Is that something a disciplined person would do? Well, yes, whether you're an adult or a child, being able to delay gratification and wait for things. Or being able to accept responsibility instead of blaming everybody else. And again, that's not just a problem for children. That's a problem with a lot of adults. It's not my fault. my parents made me this way. Society makes me this way. I can't help myself. I'm just a victim. I can't change. Refusing to accept responsibility. You would expect that from a two-year-old. He made me mad. Well, no, nobody can make you mad. You choose to be mad. But you have adults who say the same thing. So, dedication to the truth. You have some adults who, just like the child, who will cover their eyes because they think, if I can't see it, it's not there. Sometimes people will say, I don't have a drinking problem, when it's obvious to everyone that they do. And so, things like dedication to truth, you can see how those things... these things are part of what's involved in being a disciplined person. And we're going to keep emphasizing. What are we going to emphasize, Dale? The earlier you start, the better. And I'm going to come back to that in just a minute. But I want to emphasize and say a little bit more about something that I touched on Sunday, but then went off in a different direction. Chuck dealt with it actually even in his sermon, which was great. The fact that discipline is not coercion. It's not simply a matter of forcing our children to do the right thing, but really it's a matter of capturing the heart. And that's an expression that Flip Flippin uses. If some of you people in education have probably been in training called capturing the heart. And basically what he calls his training that, because he said, you know, before children care about what you know, they have to know that you care. And so to actually, you know, get students to learn instead of just to tune you out and not listen and not learn, you know, you have to care about your students. You have to build a relationship of trust to where, you know, they're not afraid to make mistakes. They're willing to take risks. They're willing to, you know, and so this capturing of the heart has to be something that's done. And, you know, so it involves, you know, freedom of choice and allowing people then to deal with the consequences. He came up with this really, I guess, because he was working with juveniles, you know, teenagers who'd gotten in trouble with the law. And he kind of got his ideas from Monty Roberts, who was better known as the horse whisperer. And the fact that, you know, how do you make a 1,200-pound horse do something? Well, you don't make them. You can't. You have to. They have to cooperate with you. If they don't want to do it, they're not going to do it. So, but you have to make them want to do it. And so if you can gain their cooperation, trust and cooperation, then, you know, not only can a 200-pound man make a 1,200-pound animal do what he wants, but you can put a 60-pound little girl on there and the horse will do whatever you want. If it's been trained, if it has discipline. And so, and the way, you know, that he started to apply that to teenagers, you can't make a teenager, particularly one that's already in trouble with the law, you know, you can't make him do hardly anything. But if you can get their cooperation, if you can get their trust, and if you can cause them to see that, hey, this is in your best interest. You know, he always gave the example of that, you know, if a person didn't want to wash their plate, you know, he'd just stick it in the fridge and then put the same plate back out the next day. You know, with the old food kind of frozen on the plate. You know, so it's fine. You don't want to wash it, don't wash it, but you just keep eating off the same plate. People figured out pretty quickly, well, that's not a pleasant consequence. So, but the reason, think about this and some of the reasoning behind this, because you may be able to force a child while you're bigger than them to do what you want them to do. But the likelihood is that there's going to come a time when they may be bigger than you. And so, aside from that, even if you could always force them to do the right thing when you were with them, are you always going to be with them? You know, are you going to go to college with them? Probably not. I had a roommate my freshman year in college who was really raised strictly, a lot more strictly than I was, in fact. And, I mean, he had no choice about when he was going to bed, what he was going to watch on TV, what he was going to wear, how he cut his hair, any of it. You know, I mean, it was just, this is the way it is, and that's, you know, I'm the parent, you're the child. And so when we got to school, and his parents are 1,200 miles away, guess how that went? He stayed up as late as he wanted to. And if that meant he was too sleepy to go to class the next day, he just didn't go to class. And instead of, you know, well, you're going to work because I said you're going to work and you're not going to play. Well, if he wanted to play ball instead of going to class, he, you know. Well, guess what grades looked like at the end of the first semester? Academic probation. So, yeah, you can say, well, you know, I'm going to just force him to do. Basically what they did was they didn't give him the opportunity to learn from consequences. No. He did faced consequences, and the consequences were that he almost got kicked out of the university. And many students, actually, that happens to them because they don't learn earlier to delay gratification, accept responsibility, you know, those things. And so the point is, when we think about discipline, that the key is that our children have to internalize that. It's not just about externally forcing them to do X, Y, and Z. But what we're really after is to get them to internalize values to where, even when we're not with them, well, this isn't right. Not just because mom's making me do it or dad said so, but because, you know, I know this isn't right. I know this is going to have bad consequences. And so, you know, we looked at the example of Luke chapter 15, the example of Leviticus chapter 26, and, you know, we saw as God uses discipline, you know, again, both positive and negative. In Leviticus 26, there's blessings if you do the right things, there's curses if you do the wrong thing. And so some people say, well, I don't think you should bribe kids. Well, no, you don't have to bribe kids, and you don't have to reward them for everything they do. You know, you're not going to give a 17-year-old an M&M for going to the potty. You know, but you know, there is a time for rewards. natural consequences are the best consequences, you know, cause and effect. This effect happened as a result of this cause. And we see that you know, God in Leviticus chapter 26 escalated. You know, you don't just, the first time a person does something wrong, you know, the death penalty. I remember a textbook. It was obviously a misprint, but in one of the education classes I had, there was a textbook on school discipline and school law. And it was saying that Texas allows capital punishment in schools. And of course they meant it allows corporal punishment, not capital punishment. So, at least at that time. But there is, you know, if you start at the top with the most severe consequence, there's nowhere else to go. And so, you know, just like God started, well, if you disobey, I'm going to withhold the rain. Your crops aren't going to grow. And if you still disobey, you know, you're going to have these sicknesses and diseases. And if you still disobey, you know, all the way up until the point, you know, if I have to send somebody in with a foreign language to kill your children and burn your houses down and carry you off into captivity, if that's what it takes, then that's where we'll go. But you have a choice. God doesn't force them to put the idol away. God doesn't force them to worship. But He says, you know, I love you. This is what I want you to do. And this is what's in your best interest. Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 24, God is for our good. God's laws are for our good always. Not for His good, for our good. But if we choose to disobey His laws, you know, it's just like choosing to disobey the law of gravity. If you want to step off a bridge or step off a building, you can do it, but there's going to be consequences. So, you know, God, you know, uses consequences. And as we think about discipline, again, we talked about it being time sensitive, and we're going to emphasize that the earlier you start, the less severe the consequences are. You know, when a 3-year-old wrecks their vehicle, probably a tricycle, it's not as serious as when a 17-year-old wrecks a motorcycle or an automobile. And so, you know, when a 2-year-old throws a tantrum, it's not as serious as when a 17-year-old throws a tantrum. Neither one is good. Neither one is acceptable. But the fact of the matter is, and I put it in red there, maybe to help if you think of this as a mantra. Just keep saying, earlier is easier. Earlier is easier. Earlier is easier. And so, remember that your job as a parent is to help your child experience positive and negative consequences. Your job is not to help them avoid or protect them from consequences. If you do that, you're robbing them of the opportunity to learn. What you're really protecting them from is learning, which is something you don't want to protect them from. You want them to learn. And it's better they learn as a toddler than as a teenager, because the stakes get higher as you move forward. And so, just as God had a multiplicity of tools in His toolbox to discipline Israel with, don't just rely on one tool. Know that there are a lot of tools out there, and they all have a value to them. I mean, verbal correction is a great tool. Sometimes it's not used enough. Loss of privileges is one of the greatest tools. I mean, that's a great consequence. And sometimes that, as Jim pointed out Sunday morning, that may stick with you a lot longer than just a little bit of pain in the posterior. You know, that passes pretty quickly. I remember a sister telling me one time that she had, her son and daughter were in trouble. If I remember right, it was for arguing or fighting or continuing to argue when she had told them to stop. And so she said, well, that's, you've disobeyed, you're going to get punished, and I'm going to let you choose your punishment. You know, you can sit down over there at the table and write, and I don't know how many times it was, I will not argue with my brother, I will treat him with respect, but this long thing that they were going to have to write over and over and over, or you're going to get a spanking. And of course, the girl said, I'm going to sit down and write. And the boy said, give me the spanking, I don't want to sit down and write. And she felt a little bit sorry for him and was spanking him, but not really. And the boy said, you need to take the spanking, it doesn't hurt. That was the wrong thing to say. You can use different tools. They all have a time and a place, but you can use them effectively or ineffectively. I had a point there, but I forget what it was. But anyway, the fact that you can use different tools and know your kids. I mean, it may be that, I guess my mother remembers this. It seemed like my sister and I, spankings really didn't bother me that much, but I sure didn't want to stay inside when it was pretty outside and I could be out there playing. And my sister didn't mind staying inside in the air conditioning at all, but she didn't want a spanking. So, my parents figured that out real quick. It's like which one means most to each one. And so you may not get the same punishment, but that's all right because they knew what worked with me and they knew what worked with her. And so, again, just like you may need different tools, different situations, maybe different tools even for different children. But as you think about loss of privileges, time out or separation, restitution, corporal punishment, spanking, we're going to talk about that's with some people a hot issue. But I mean, I don't see how you can read the Bible and have any question about whether or not it's okay to spank your kids or whether you should spank your kids. I mean, basically, if you refuse to do that, you're doing them a disservice. You're robbing them of an opportunity to learn that hey, there's a negative consequence when you do this or you do. Now we'll talk about, especially I think when that's appropriate. It's not the best answer for everything. As I said, we'll see. And again, realize positive things as well as negative things. But what did I do there? I don't know. Let me just leave that up there. Where we want to go next, I think, is, and we'll do as many of these as we can this evening, and then I don't have another sheet for Sunday, but kind of what I want you to do is things that we don't cover this evening. I want you to bring examples to class of, okay, well, how would you handle this situation? What about this situation? We'll play, see if you can, it won't be stump the teacher, it'll be stump the audience, because we'll give everybody a chance to have input on some suggestions. But I wanted to start with, when we think about starting early, less than a year old, is there anything that a child less than a year old needs to know? Sure. What are some things that a child that's less than a year old needs to know?
The meaning of no.
Yeah, especially once they start to toddle around and, like I say, when my kids were that young, there was a wood stove. And it was real important that they know that you can't touch that. And it wasn't a matter that you could just let them get burned and learn the hard way. I mean, and we talked about, a slap on the wrist. And we use that expression all the time. In fact, that's become an expression. What does a slap on the wrist mean when you hear that in general? A light punishment. And it's not a serious punishment. But, for a toddler that's walking towards something that's dangerous and you say no, they need to know what no means. And I've dealt with children that came to the first day of school and didn't have a clue of what the word no meant. If they'd ever heard it, it had never been enforced. And so, their idea was, well, just, Like I said, I told you, a mother one time called me because her 5-year-old wouldn't get out of bed. She called the school and said, "Will you ask the principal?" It happened to be just a few blocks away, so I went. But it's like, you know, you seriously, you're telling me you can't get a 5-year-old to get out of bed? You know, get a super soaker or a spray bottle, and I guarantee you he'll get out of bed. Okay. But anyway, you know, they need to know the word no. Okay, Chuck. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. And I think really that'll become more the point when they're in the 2 to 3. You know, a 9-month-old probably isn't going to understand the concept of authority, but they can associate with, oh, that hurts. You know, and so if it's something, you know, yeah. Right. Oh, yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah. The other big thing that I'm going to suggest to you, then we'll go on to some other things, that they really need to learn, and they can learn in the first year of life, is that to learn that they're okay if they're by themselves. And sometimes you have to wait and be patient. And so, you know, every time that they're alone, you know, if they start crying, that doesn't mean, oh, I got to run and pick them up. Well, you may want to check and make sure they're not wet or hungry. But if, you know, if they're fed and if they're clean, and if you put them down and they start to cry, but when you pick them up, they stop. And when you put them down, they start. And when you pick them, you know, at some point you're going to have to say, hey, you know, you can't stay up all night and sleep all day. You know, I can't do that, so you can't do. So, you know, when it's bedtime, you know, if you're going to teach a schedule, and you know, you're going to have to teach a schedule, you know, and you put them down. If they cry, it's okay. It's good for their lungs. Okay. Now you may want to, you know, give them a few minutes, and usually they fall asleep. They quit and they fall asleep. It's tiring. But if it's not, go back in, comfort them, and leave again. You know, they're going to fall asleep. You know, but again, you'll see people who just, when I leave them, they cry. And I've seen lots of mamas on the first day of school who won't leave the classroom because every time I try to leave the classroom, they cry. Are you going to go to 12 years of school with them? No. You know, at some point, they have to understand that, okay, there's, you know, it's okay to be, I'm safe. I can be separated from mom. She can be out of sight. You know, and especially once you have more than one child, that, you know, sometimes you have to wait your turn. You know, somebody else needs attention, and you can't say, you know, I want the attention now. You'll get attention, but it may not be right now. You may have to wait a few minutes, and it won't kill you. Yes. Absolutely. And so, you know, that's again the point that about, like I say, if you're trying to teach them that it's okay to be separated, that doesn't mean, you know, the first time you do this, okay, I'm going to leave you for 8 hours and then, you know, you'll get over it. But, you know, you may leave for 5 minutes, come back, leave for 10 minutes, come back, you know, and, you know, you may go with them the first day of school. But, you know, when it's time to leave and you decide it's time to leave, it isn't going to kill them when you leave. And, you know, we have the same thing back here in the classrooms. You know, and it's interesting. You know, I could always tell, most of you know I was an elementary principal for several years, and it was interesting. You always tell kids who had been to church, you know, they didn't have a problem when their parents left. they didn't have a problem sitting down. They didn't have to jump up and run everywhere. They knew how to sit still. You know, that's, they'd already had that experience. But again, I've seen 4-year-olds, 5-year-olds who've never a day in their life have had to sit down. Never a day in their life been told no or been told wait. And it's clear sometimes that children rule some houses, rule some homes. Basically, the parent does whatever the child says to do. You know, whenever the child cries, the parent jumps. Now, obviously, if there's an emergency, and you ought to check. But usually, you know the difference. I mean, most mothers can tell by the sound. You know, is this a hurt cry, or is this a I want attention cry? And it's different. And, and it's not that you can't ever say, well, you know, I'm just going to comfort them and give them attention. Well, that's fine sometimes too. That's a great way to build trust and confidence. But at the same time, they need to have the opportunity to learn that I can function on my own for 5 minutes, for 10 minutes, for 15 minutes. And, you know, as a child gets older, time period can extend. I've known parents who think, well, you know, we'll never go out to eat again until they go off to college because I can't leave them with a sitter, or, you know, even with my parents or his parents, because they're so afraid of the child being out of their sight. But it's actually good for the child too, good for you and good for the child. I didn't put this on the list, but planned ignoring is actually a strategy that, you know, generally you don't ignore things that need attention, but sometimes some things, you know, if the person is trying to get attention and you give attention, then you're rewarding the very behavior that you're trying to eliminate, and that's counterproductive. It's the best illustration I can give of this is, you know, there was a study where these kids, teenagers, kept getting in trouble at recess and being sent to the office. And this kept happening, and you know, somebody finally figured out, you know, it's August and it's hot out there. It's recesses at noon, and they're hot and they're sweaty, and the office has air conditioning. And so, you know, if I get in trouble, I'm forced to go inside and sit in the air conditioning. Now, that's a real deterrent, isn't it? You know, so if you actually, you know, basically reward the person for doing what you're trying to eliminate, that's not going to be effective. And so, generally you don't ignore, but if it's something that you know, okay, this is just a ploy to get attention, you know, there may be an occasion where that's okay. You know, one of the ways we'll talk about when we talk about handling tantrums is to, you know, instead of, you know, having a meltdown yourself, just, oh, well, when you're through with that, let's talk. They'll get tired pretty quick. It's hard. That takes a lot of energy. And, you know, I mean, that's not the only way to handle it, but, you know, that's one way to handle it. But again, the point is that even a 9-month-old, a 10-month-old, if they're old enough to walk, they're old enough to know what no means. By their first birthday, they ought to understand that they ought to, hopefully you've built their trust enough that they don't, they're afraid of being out of your sight or having you out of their sight. Hopefully you've given them enough confidence that, oh, anytime I've ever needed something, my need's been taken care of. Now, there's a difference between a need and a want. You know, give your children everything they need, but you can never give them everything they want. And you shouldn't give them everything they want. There's a big difference between a want and a need. So give them what they need. And that may not always be what they want. Okay, what about they pass the first birthday? That fun time. You know, that's got a special name for it, right? What are the twos called? Terrible twos? They're not terrible, really. But from, and again, it's not like they flip a switch when they hit that 365th day. You know, some get there quicker and some get there later. But in general, just when we think about children, say from 1 to 3 years old, what are some things that you know, these children are going to need? Dale?
Well, I mean, just talking about that start to talk, they'll just out of instinct, they'll start talking back to you.
Yeah.
And you've got to correct it soon, because if you don't, I've seen people when their kids look at them and say no, and they laugh at it as if it's some type of joke, and oh, that's so cute.
Right.
And the kid's just like, oh, great, I can tell my parents what to do.
Right.
And they don't correct them, and it just goes on and on and on and on. And it goes back to that, the earlier you get to deal with it,
yeah,
the easier it'll be later, because if you don't start soon, it just gets worse.
Yeah. You'll be surprised if you sit down sometime and think of all the things that you hope your teenager, and you may not even have a child yet, but just think, one day if I were to have a teenager, what would I want that teenager to be like? What would I want that teenager to know? And put down a list of things that you would hope that a teenager would know. And then start to think, okay, look at that list, each one of those things, and say, okay, now where am I going to start teaching this? Are you going to start when they're a teenager? Good luck. Dale?
Well, and it's just simple things. I've seen parents who wear glasses, and when they hold their kids, they take their glasses off because the kid, they keep reaching for the glasses instead,
yeah,
of correcting them and say, no, you don't touch my glasses.
Right.
Simple as, I mean, I used to have my pencils in my pocket.
Right.
I wouldn't let them play with them because it's just one of the teaching
moments. Yeah, it's an
opportunity.
Yeah.
Except for being selfish.
Yeah.
That one's automatic.
Okay. Yeah. It's a. But
you've got to teach them not to be selfish.
Yeah. It's an opportunity to teach them no.
Right.
And it's a lot better for you to teach them that than for a police officer to teach them that.
Right.
You know, because if they disregard the police officer who says no, they may get shot. Or they may end up in handcuffs. Yes, sir.
By the time the police get involved, it's too late.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Because I'm sorry, I've gone to teenagers' houses, I've gone to 10-year-olds' houses where they just disrespect. They disrespect me, and I'm,
yeah,
in uniform and have no one on the side of my
head. Yeah.
I'm a police officer.
Yeah. Right. And, but they weren't taught with the word no, you know, and maybe the parent thought, well, when they're a teenager, I'm going to teach them. But think about the idea of respect. I mean, obviously, respect is something you would hope that a teenager would learn, right? Well, when are you going to start to teach that? Well, you know, it goes all the way back to, you know, these are my glasses, keep your hands off of them. Or, this is my pen, keep your hand off of it. Or, you know, why? You know, when you say don't do that, I say why? You know, and you're going to hear why a lot from your kids. But, you know, there's a great reason why. Well, because of respect for authority. And the ultimate respect, and from the time, you know, I mean, you can teach them from the time you first read a Bible story to them that, you know, respect for authority begins with respect for God. And respect for God, God says children obey your parents. Can a 3-year-old know that God says, or that the Bible says children obey your parents? And that God wants them to obey their parents. So why would you wait until they're a teenager to say, okay, you need to learn to respect? You know, that needs to start when they're, you know, from the very beginning. Most of these things that you want your teenagers to know, you've got to start early. You've got to start early. So, you know, obviously respect to a 2-year-old is going to be different than respect for a 6-year-old or respect for a 12-year-old or respect for a 17-year-old. But there's going to be a standard of what respect is for each of those ages. And there's going to be different consequences for each of those ages. But, you know, when you think about children, you know, as early as 2 years old, 3 years old, surely, they should have already learned what stop and no means, but you're not going to wait until they're teenagers. If you didn't teach them in the first year, you sure better teach them in the second and third year. You know, you're going to begin to teach things about, you know, respect for others. You know, everybody can't always be first. And, you know, if you end up having more than one child, whether you have a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old or twins or triplets or whatever, they can't all be first. Chuck?
Yeah, but respect for others,
Yeah. You make an excellent point. Teaching children about respect for other people, that, you know, yes, you know, you have freedoms, but your freedoms stop where other people's freedom starts. And so people ought to have the freedom to be able to worship, take the Lord's Supper without, you know, major distractions. I can remember one time, this was when I was a kid, one of my younger cousins, I was visiting with them at some denomination, and the little Lewis one, he had this tractor, and he's going from the back pew all the way to the front pew underneath him with his tractor, and Mom wasn't doing a thing about it, and everybody in the building is watching this little guy going back and forth during the lesson, up and down with his tractor, and it's like, I'd have never got by with that. You know, and he shouldn't have got by with that, but that's, you know, I want to mow my grass, but I don't do it at 6:30 a.m. You know, that's disrespectful to people who are trying to sleep. Even if it's something that's okay for me to do, I've got to think about, well, how's that affecting other people? And that's something we need to teach our children. Can a 2-year-old be taught to sit still or to be quiet?
Yeah.
Absolutely. And you might need to practice at home. You know, if it's not working here or at school, you know, practice at home. You know, you're going to sit in that chair. If you're 2 years old, you can sit there for 2 minutes. And you know, we're going to practice it. How do you learn any skill? Usually, it's by practice. You might think, well, that's harsh. Not really. It's not. I'll tell you what's harsh is letting kids do whatever they want, and then they go to school and they think, well, I always get my way, and they don't have any friends because he's a bully and he's selfish and he always has to have his way, and then he wants to know why he doesn't have any friends. You have to teach respect for others. No, you can't always be first. And you don't wait until they start school to teach them that. Sometimes you have to wait. Sometimes you have to be quiet. Consequences if they don't. There's lots of consequences. Find what works. I've known people to take them out and give them a SWAT, and that might solve it. Some kids, maybe that doesn't work. I'll tell you what works. One thing I've seen is if you're fussy at church, when we get home, then you, obviously if you're fussy, you're tired and you need a nap. Not a nap. we've been in church. I'm ready to go. Well, if you're fussy, you're tired. You need a nap. You'd be surprised how effective that is. If you want to play when it's time to play, then the rule is, if you play when it's time to work, then you're going to work when it's time to play. Or you could say, if you play when it's time to pray, you're not going to play when it's time to play. I think Jackson first, and then Dick. Right. Don't know where they're getting it from.
I know they got an example of it. So, and they're going to, that's the first person they're going to look to for this is how life is supposed to be is the parents. You can tell them all day long and punish them. They're eventually going to get really mad and angry and act you are, not to do what you want to do. And I want to guide you. So,
yeah.
The whole of the idea of using our example is always going to be much more effective than our words.
Absolutely. Dale?
Well, I think it's so important to understand, too, the age of the kid in version what you do. The younger they are, the fewer things they understand with discipline. The older they get,
right.
A lot of this time out, loss of privileges,
right.
That can come into play. When they're little bitty,
right.
Man, you know, and especially the little kid, you say, well, we wait till we get home. You know, 10 minutes later, they forgot about it.
Right.
It's totally gone from their mind. And then if you get home and punish them, they're like, I mean, it's confusing to them.
Yeah.
The younger they are, the faster you need to deal with it and take care of it. And as they get older, then you start to, they understand. Then the dread of, oh, boy, I remember me going home from church and getting in trouble and dreading it home just thinking, oh, I hope he's forgot about it.
Yeah.
Oh, I hope he's forgot about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You
know,
that's when you get older. When they're little, it just, you got to deal with it right then and there so they remember what they did, why they're getting punished. And that's
right.
Important. You know, it's like they understand it. And, you know, just you got to pay attention as a parent as to what's going on. You can't just be passive.
Yeah, we'll talk more about this Sunday, but you know, when you tell a 2-year-old, if you do that, you're going to be grounded. That probably no effect whatsoever.